Hey, Bill, how are you?
Good, Glenn.
Steve, great.
How you doing?
Did you have a good weekend? Did you have a good weekend? Chill out, relax, watch some football?
Beach time, maybe?
A little football, yeah.
Snowboarding?
Now, can you actually sit down and enjoy these games as a fan, or do you sit there and do the same thing you do when you're doing film sessions and kind of break them down?
Yeah, well, no, I don't think you can break down games off TV. It's hard. But I watched the Indianapolis-Jets game, and once that was decided, then got to work on the Jets.
Did your heart stop when they took a timeout with 29 seconds left?
I don't get that into it, Fred. I mean, whatever happens, happens.
So you didn't go out and see a play because apparently Brady went out and saw Lombardi on Broadway on Saturday.
I've heard
night.
That's fantastic.
That's what I've heard, too. I actually went after I heard it today. I went out and tried to see if I could get some
Lombardi?
Tickets for it. That's supposed to be terrific.
Yep.
Did you see the documentary they did? They just did a documentary on HBO. Have you seen that yet, Bill?
I haven't.
Terrific. You want to see that. All right, here's what Rex Ryan said today. This is about Bill Belichick versus Rex Ryan. There's no question. It's personal. It's about him against myself. That's what it's going to come down to. Do you guys like sumo wrestling or something here on Sunday?
You're faster than him, though, Bill.
Yeah?
Just trying to get our team ready to play the Jets, that's all.
Isn't that unusual for a coach to come out and actually say it's personal when you've got 45 players dressing up and he's got 45 dressing up?
Yeah, I'm not really too worried about what they say. I'm just worried about what we do.
You hear him talk about, he said Tom thinks he studies, and you've been around Tom, so he probably does study a little bit, doesn't he?
Tom prepares very well.
Yeah, for a coach to come out and say it was personal against Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady thinks he studies, Peyton Manning really studies. I don't know how he gets in the film room with each player, but that's unusual to him to know exactly how they're studying.
I know we've had this conversation. We had this conversation earlier in the season about different styles or whatever. But do you just kind of laugh this one off when a coach kind of like calls you out? Like at the beginning of the week when you're going to play a playoff game. We were trying to figure it out today. I don't remember his dad doing that. I don't remember a lot of coaches actually doing something like that before. And even you said, at the time when we were talking about different styles, you got to be yourself, and maybe that's what his personality it is. And you've got to be yourself. But have you ever seen coaches do this before? Do you remember coaches calling out other coaches like this?
Yeah. I don't know, Glenn. I'm just really just trying to get ready to play.
Otherwise, next question.
Exactly. All right. I get it.
Seattle game. Did you see that Lynch run at the end of the game?
Tremendous.
Weren't they stacked at the line? Tremendous. I don't know where that's more yards than he had.
He broke about six tackles, didn't he?
Yeah.
They counted eight. They actually did frame, and they came up with each one of them. There were eight guys. I don't know if you heard, but there was an earthquake apparently at the exact same time at Crest Field. Same time. Fred thinks
it was.
It,
the
Fred
energy
it was
from
part
that earthquake.
Of it. Fred
was
thinks
like
it. Was, yeah, Fred thinks it
Fred
was
thinks
part
it was Dr. Evil.
all the people up there meditating. You know, all those people up there kind of wacko.
How much time did you give you guys off? Was it Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Players came in, worked out a little bit today, and be ready to go tomorrow.
How important is it to maintain the similar routine to what you had during the season?
Well, I think, we'll treat it kind of like a Monday night game. So we'll start on Tuesday instead of on Wednesday, and it'll be ready to go on Sunday.
Brandon Spikes, he's back. What did he look like this past week, and is he ready to play on Sunday?
Well, we'll see, and we still have a week to go, and we'll see how it goes.
You know, when Bill Belichick first started coaching, that'd be you, did you ever think you'd get to the point where you would give guys 3 days off? Because, because when you start, you're obsessed because you want to get everything done right. Right, but it comes a time when you know that you need guys to clear their head a little bit and get some time to get their legs back.
Well, we've had some byes before. You know, we have a bye week every year during the regular season, and we've had some byes in the postseason. So I feel comfortable with where our team's at. In all honesty, I felt like we could do last week, not knowing who exactly we were going to play. And once that was determined Saturday night, then it's been full speed ahead on the Jets and. Players will be in tomorrow and we'll be ready to roll.
Was there any, when it was before this whole thing settled, there wasn't any preference or just any team that happened to win, you were going to treat that equally? It wasn't Jets because obviously we all hate the Jets. I know you're partial to that. But, there was a couple teams out there. You didn't have any preference. Anyone that fell your way?
Well, all those things are out of our control, so it doesn't really matter. Just whatever happened, and we're waiting to see what the results were. The Jets won. That declared it Saturday. Didn't make any difference what happened on Sunday. in the Baltimore-Kansas City game, we already had our opponent, so we got to work on it.
There's been a lot of talk about the new overtime rule for the playoffs. I've heard a lot of coaches say, I wish they had tried it out during the regular season, but here we are. It's there for the playoffs. How much have you spent time going over every single possible situation? Some people have talked about onside kicks, and maybe that's the one way of doing it after you've scored, doing an onside kick. How many different situations have you gone through with this?
Well, we've talked about it. Talked about it when the rule was first put in, then kind of tabled it until now. And you know, I've had a couple conversations with some of our staff about it. But yeah, it's kind of bizarre that we're changing the rules here, heading it over into the postseason. But that's what it is. So we'll deal with it.
It is bizarre, you know, especially the refs, as incompetent as they are. No, you're going to give guys that haven't done it before in live action a shot at a whole new system.
Well, it's new for everybody. It's new for the coaches, the players, and the officials. So probably the easiest on the officials, they can just, you know, read the rules and apply them. But the players and coaches that have been working in this system for, you know, a number of years now, it's different. So
now what is it? That if you score a touchdown in overtime, you win? Or if you get a field goal, the other team has a chance to go at it?
That's the long and short of it with, you know, 100 addendums, but that's the long and short of it.
See, it's the 100 addendums that I think become scary in the course of the game. And Peter King brought up one last week about the onside kick. I mean, once you've given that other team the opportunity of control of the ball, suddenly you've got control of the ball again. So, I mean, that's where I think it's going to rear its ugly head when one of those 100 different possibilities pop up.
Well, it certainly, you know, this is one of those things that, you know, I think is a rule that was attempted to fix a problem, and it may have done that, or, you know, may have created 100 new ones. Who knows?
Does it change the philosophy of all? Nowadays, it seems like everybody's deferring the opening coin toss, the opening kick, they're deferring. It seems like everybody's doing that. I don't remember that happening a lot back when I was playing, but does it change at all the possibility of the strategy going into the overtime? I mean, in any certain way?
Oh, I think it does, Steve, absolutely. And I think when you look at the college overtime rule, you almost always see teams defer. Mm-hmm. So when they get the ball back the second time, they know what they need. They know if they need a field goal. They know if they need a touchdown based on what the team of the first possession had. So, you know, there's certainly something to be said for that. Whether that's the way it'll play out or not, we'll just have to wait and see. But I think you could at least make an argument for that.
It would take a lot of nerve or
chutzpah.
Guts to defer a receiving in an overtime. But it's conceivable. You're absolutely right. It's conceivable.
It's easier because then you can tell what he does and what you need.
Yeah, until they score a
touchdown. As long as they don't score a touchdown,
right.
That's right. So
right.
As long as they don't score a touchdown on the first drive, it probably is to your advantage to defer.
Yeah.
Or give them the ball, however you want to call it. But because then you can win the game with a field goal, which if you get it on the first possession, you can't end the game on a field goal. It might be the winning points, but you can't actually end it there. So, you know, it brings up a lot of different possibilities, and none of which any of us have played in. So it'll create a lot of new things. And, of course, you know, not only you have the coaches and the players and the officials, but then, of course, you know, you have the fans, all the people that are watching the game now. You know, they have to understand that there's a new set of rules. So
this might sound kind of crazy, but why don't they just extend the game 10 minutes with normal rules so everyone knows what's going on?
That's up to the people who make the rules.
It's a greater mind.
You know, give them that shot at.
Why don't you head to New York? Take a caravan out there.
I keep trying. I can't get by security.
Force the commissioner to change. Bill, when a team beats a team by as big a score as you did the last time, do you normally expect them to change up things that they were doing? Or do you kind of write that one off and say, well, we did a lot of good things early on in the game. The game became out of hand, and then and that's why you got a blowout like that.
Well, I don't think really the outcome of that game makes any difference, or the first one for that matter. You learn from the matchups, you learn from the you know, the strategy, the way the two teams met each other. But this is a whole new game. I don't think it really matters. So we'll look at the strengths that the Jets have and try to defend those, and the weaknesses that we think we see, we'll try to attack them. And I'm sure they'll do the same thing to us. And whatever happened a month ago or 3 months ago back in September, I don't think it really makes any difference.
Have they been able to replace Jim Leonard in their secondary yet?
Well, they have with you know, Smith and Poole, mm-hmm. and those guys are both pretty pretty experienced players. Those guys play a lot of football, so I think they did a real good job against Indianapolis, and of course played well against Buffalo the week before that. So I think that I think they're fine.
Going to the Indianapolis game, they seem to confuse Manning a little bit. You know, I know he didn't have his full repertoire of receivers. But did they show anything different? I mean, they look like they baited him into the audible into the run, and it's third and long, and him rolling out seems unusual for a guy. Looked like the Tin Man, the Wizard of Oz, trying to run on a rollout. But did they do anything different to bait him into making audibles or bait him into throwing?
I think they played the Colts a little bit differently than the way they've played a lot of other teams over the course of the year, with more two-deep safeties and a lot of two-deep looks dropping down into a one-deep look. That wasn't something that they have done a lot of. They've done it from time to time, but it was a big part of the Colts game plan. So I think that was specifically for the way they were playing the Colts. But again, they played their defenses and tried to disguise them against Manning, which everybody tries to do. That's part of the game plan. They did a good job.
Is the difference between the running styles of Green and Tomlinson, is that a factor in your defensive thinking when you know who's in the ball game and defense you call?
Well, I think it's really important for the players to know who's in the game. I don't know if it changes a lot of your calls. Maybe you might want to do a couple things a little bit differently. But for the most part, they run the same plays, and you have to defend them the same. It's just they have completely different running styles. And so I think you really have to be aware of who has the ball. They're both very good runners, but their styles complement each other. And I think that the defensive players definitely need to know, which back they're trying to tackle, which back they're trying to defend on the perimeter, and went back to trying to defend the passing game, because they have different skill sets, but they're both very good.
Brett Smith got nicked up, and we don't know what his situation is, but when you see him or from the sideline, do you have somebody watching to see when he comes in the game? Because many times he's coming behind center and change your personnel at that point.
Yeah, Glenn, we watch to see everybody that comes in the game. There's 11 guys out there. We need to know who all 11 are. If they change tight ends, if they change tackles, if they change whichever receivers are in the game, absolutely. We need to know every player that's on the field, both sides of the ball and in the kicking game. And when they change or when they have different groupings, then we should be aware and are aware of those tendencies that come with them, either with that individual player or with the particular group that's on the field. So, yeah, absolutely.
Does he change it dramatically as far as what your personnel, what you have to have for a personnel package out there in the field because of what his skill set is and how different they are when he's out there?
I think you have to be aware of his presence on the field. Now, he doesn't always line up at quarterback.
Right.
He also lines up a receiver. So you have to be able to defend him as a receiver, which he's good at, but also they have some different formations, different looks where he's lines up in the backfield, either under center or in the shotgun as in kind of a wildcat look, but also sometimes he'll just take the snap kind of as a regular quarterback would. So they definitely present some different looks there, and your defense has to be aware of whatever adjustment you're going to make against those things. So no question, you have to know about him and know where he is.
On defense, they give you a lot of looks, different looks. How often do they change personnel compared to other teams? They do a lot of wholesale changes, or can they run up one package and use multiple looks out of that?
I'd say for the most part, they're a matchup team, Fred. So depending on who you have on the field, then they have a certain group that they want to match with that group. And that could, however many groups you have, then they probably have close to an equal number of defensive matches with that, so they can go anywhere from 5 defensive backs to 6 to 7, anywhere from 1 defensive lineman to 2 to 3 to 4, same thing with linebackers. So it just depends on your personnel on the field and, to some degree, of course, the situation. They definitely have a number of different packages, and the more variety you have, then probably the more variety you're going to get from them in their matchups.
So the more versatility you have out of set, let's say you bring in 3 tight ends, obviously it's a run formation, but you can go into a pass formation if you have one back set, and they'll bring a group to stop the run. At that time, is it sometimes more likely going?
Well, they'll bring in a group to stop what they think you're going to do. If they think you're going to run, then they'll have a run group out there. If they're not that convinced on it, then they'll play it with a more balanced group. And they also have some different ways to play their sub defenses. For example, their nickel and dime defenses with an odd front with 1 defensive lineman, or with an even front with 2 defensive linemen, and some different pressures and coverages that come off that. So they do a good job of mixing it up, but I'd say they're very much of a matchup defense, much more so than some other teams that we play, that you have a much better chance of them just leaving the group out there that they want to, that they want on the field, regardless of who you put on there. They take more of an attitude of, here's what we want to play. We don't really care who you have in the game. The Jets are much more reactive to the offensive personnel.
Do you expect the Jets to take Revis and try to eliminate one of your receivers, whether it's Welker or Branch or someone? Do you expect them to try to do something like that?
Well, it's something that we've seen them do before. We didn't see a lot of that in the last game that we played. There was some matchup, but not it wasn't, you know, all the time. And sometimes, you know, we use a lot of different formations, and sometimes it's sort of hard to tell who is matching up, or if they're only matching up on certain calls, which calls are matchup calls and which calls aren't. In other words, if you were to flip your receivers, would they flip with you or would they not? You know, and you don't know that unless you're in a formation really a lot of times. You get a lot of looks at it. You see a number of their different calls, and you can figure it out. So I think with the number of different looks that we gave them and the number of different looks that they have, that's an interesting question. I don't know that that anybody really knows the answer to that, except the Jets know how much they match up, and we know what we saw, but we can't be sure if it's that going to be that way every single time, because there were a number of variations from us and from them. So that's an interesting question.
Along that line, we had a little game earlier. Steve played you. Fred played Rex. Ate a lot of food.
It's a stretch.
Ate a lot of food. Put some extra padding on. And I asked both both of them, what would you do against the other team? Fred's point was that he thought with the personnel that you have now, post Randy Moss and the way you're utilizing your offense, that he thought, as Rex Ryan, it made more sense to go out there and play a little bit more zone. And we know that the Jets like to play a lot of man-to-man. Do you expect to see a little bit more zone out of them with the way that you've played and the success that you had in the passing game?
Well, I think defensively the Jets have a lot of different options. They play zone. They play man-to-man. They have several different types of man-to-man. They pressure. They run blitz zones. They run blitz man. And they try to keep you off balance. And certainly if you're having trouble with one particular thing that they're doing, you're pretty likely to continue to see that until you show them that, you know, that they shouldn't be playing that against you. So a lot of the game depends on, in all honesty, how the game's going. If there's something that they're hurting you with and you don't have a good answer for it, then you're probably going to see more of it. And if you're doing a good job against a certain type of coverage or look, then he's less likely to call that and move away to something else that he feels more, it's a better matchup against you. So I think the short answer to that would be that you have to be ready for everything. They have a good variety and a good good menu of different looks that they can give you, and you really have to be ready for all of them. So you don't know which ones they're going to pull out, and if it's going well, then you better figure out a way to attack those particular ones that they're using, or you'll see them all day.
How much of a change of pace was it when they came out last time? They went no huddle and tried to move quickly. It seemed to kind of go against them a little bit. Is that the norm for them? I mean, they don't usually come out like that. It seemed like the game speeded up and got out of their hands. Maybe they'll come out this time and slow it down, try to run the ball, be more of a, you know, geared towards keeping it in control as far as the speed of the game, so it doesn't get out for Sanchez.
Well, in the four games that we played them since Ryan's been there, they've used some version of no huddle during the game. I'm not talking about 2 minute, but at some point in the game they've used a no huddle, quicker pace type of offense, and so we expected that. We expected to see it somewhere along the line. They opened with it right out of the gate, so that's the first time they had done that. But we definitely had practiced against it because they'd used it in all of our games, and they used it in other games as kind of a change of pace or change in the tempo type of thing in the other games that we've scouted. So, you know, we expect to see that somewhere along the line. Of course, if they're in 2 minute at the end of the half, then we know what we're going to get there. But they also have up-tempoed it somewhere along the line and during the course of the game. And you know, if they elect to do it, it won't be something that we have prepared for.
All right, it's our monthly get-together with the coach, Bill Belichick. Playoffs are here. We'll take a quick break. We'll spend a few more minutes here with the coach.
Only place to hear the players and coach Bill Belichick before and after the game. Patriots Monday and Patriots Friday is on the WEEI Sports Radio Network at WEEI.com.
Hello again. I'm talking New School Banking with CapitalOne.com. Their interest plus savings account earns three times more than traditional old school banks. Let's call one and experience their old school ways.
Savings accounts, Louise speaking.
Louise, would you be so kind as to tell me your interest rate on a savings account?
Well, but it's greater than zero.
And less than thrilling.
Oh.
You're banking old school.
Well, sure, our rates are kind of low, but...
Puny.
But we do have plenty of free parking.
How generous.
Oh, no, wait, that's for the employees.
Folks, call your bank, then go to CapitalOne.com.
Okay.
Talk about free parking. You don't even need your car.
Huh.
And an interest plus savings account earns you three times the national average on your savings.
Oh, and we also offer free pens.
Oh, free pens.
Well, you can't take them with you. They're attached to a little chain, silly.
It's more like free ink, wouldn't you say?
Free ink. Another perk.
What's in your wallet?
Good one.
Three times interest available only with balances of $1,000 or more. Rates may change after account opening. Capital One Bank USA NA and Capital One NA members FDIC.
I recycle.
I turn off.
I unplug.
You think green. Companies are realizing they need to think green, too. That's why DeVry University and our Keller Graduate School of Management are bringing green into our degree programs to give you a green edge that can help you get where you want to be. Learn more online at DeVry.edu and let nothing stand in your way. Certified to operate by CHEV, DeVry University is authorized for operation by the THEC. Program availability varies by location.
I'm all about the three S's: stock up, save money, and simplify.
Member Rene Chevalier on the Sam's Club January stock up event.
I stock up now and save big on the basics we use all the time. Detergent, paper towels.
Health and beauty products too. Save over retail on brands like Tide, Bounty, and Colgate. And sample all the Sam's Club values and benefits January 12th through 25th with no membership required.
Now that's simple.
Not a member? Join at Sam's Club or samsclub.com. Sam's Club, savings made simple.
It's a machine that delivers unmatched performance, that's equipped with the latest technology, and that keeps your business running at full speed. The Epson Workforce 840 all-in-one printer prints two-sided documents two times faster than the HP OfficeJet 8500 and delivers the stunning print quality Epson is known for. Keep your business running at full speed with the Workforce 840 from Epson. Built to perform. Save instantly on an Epson all-in-one today at Best Buy, Office Max, Staples, and Epson.com.
Find great deals on an Epson workforce printer at Staples, Best Buy, Office Max, and Epson.com.
These days, we're all looking for ways to save. That's why if you already use natural gas in your home or business, National Grid will show you how easy it is to change your oil heat to more efficient natural gas. Switching to natural gas heat now can increase your energy efficiency up to 30%. Imagine that kind of energy savings every month, year after year. Call 1-877-MY-N-GRID now to find out more. And if you act now, you could qualify for hundreds of dollars of savings on new high-efficiency heating equipment. Call National Grid at 1-877-MY-N-GRID. That's 1-877-MY-N-GRID. And see how you can be using less energy to heat your home or business. After all, the less energy you use, the less energy you pay for. National Grid, the power of action. This heating equipment offer is only good for home or business owners who do not already heat with natural gas and where gas from National Grid is available. This is a limited time offer and some restrictions may apply.
Does your roof need replacing? Your house need cleaning? Or maybe you're ready to update your kitchen. Big or small, whatever your home improvement need, log on to fast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to pre-screened remodelers, maids, handymen, painters, and many other home contractors. It's easy and it's free. Just go to fast.servicemagic.com. Fast.servicemagic.com. That's fast.servicemagic.com.
Hi, back here on the Big Show. It's Patriots Monday. We are live down here at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Glenn Ordway, Freddie Smirla, Steve DiAzzi, and of course the coach, Bill Belichick. Pats and the Jets coming up this Sunday. The special teams, and you talk about it all the time, but if you look at that game on Saturday night, Indianapolis does exactly what they need to do. They go down, they get the 3 points, so they take the lead in the game. And what happens? Kickoff, and suddenly the Jets are playing from midfield. I'm sure if Cromartie doesn't get to midfield, maybe the Jets don't win that football game.
It was a big play in the game. Big play in the game, absolutely.
It's amazing how those plays and they become, we talk about them during the regular season, you know, special teams and how those plays play into getting that extra touchdown that you need to win the game. But, man, they're even bigger when you get to these playoffs.
Well, yeah, I mean, anytime you get into a close game, field position in the kicking game, seems like it always makes the difference. The games are so competitive that one or two plays in that area, whether it's a kick or a return or just a field position play that sets up points, that can be the difference.
And also it gives you emotional swing. One big play like that can change the tide of the emotion. You're kind of down. If you got tackled on the 15-yard line, you're going out there going, oh, my goodness, what are you going to do? One thing that interests me in that game, it seemed like they had kept the parameters on Manning, and he wasn't able to open up the offense. Is that because of what they did or because of the lack of offensive weapons that Indianapolis had?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure, Fred, but the way it looked to me was that, you know, Manning had the opportunity to do what he usually does, and he took a lot of those two deep looks where the safeties weren't down and took some opportunities to run the ball, and they converted a couple of those third and sixes, third and sevens with runs, which are a little bit uncharacteristic of Indianapolis. And then that last one they had, I think a third and seven or whatever it was, and before the field goal, they ran it on that one. And the Jets stopped them. And of course, that was a big play, and that gave them enough time to get the ball back to score. But you're right; the kickoff return was a huge play, and as opposed to getting tackled on the 20 and getting it out to midfield, I mean, that's three first downs you don't have to make. So that's the power of the kicking game. You can do it all at once.
You said something right there. It's uncharacteristic. How important is it for you to get out and establish what you want to do, as opposed to do something that's uncharacteristic like the Colts did? You know, when you get the big play or you establish the pace of your offense, I mean, how early is it important to get that established?
Well, I think you always want to play from ahead, you know, get off to a good start and play from ahead. But, you know, these games are 60-minute games, and sometimes you're better in the early part of the game. Sometimes you're better in the later part of the game. So I think the most important thing is just to play your best for 60 minutes, And if you can avoid any big mistakes, any big turnovers or long big plays or you know, just big errors, then you know, you got a pretty good chance to stay in most games.
You've been you've had one of the most prolific offenses in 2007, and your offense this year leading the NFL in scoring. Do you find that the threat of that offense, the threat of those 31, 32 points a game or 37 like in 07, do you find that changes what other teams come into the game thinking? Do you see them doing uncharacteristic things because of the need to maybe keep up with a prolific offense?
Well, I think there, Steve, I think there definitely are some signs of that in the Green Bay game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Green Bay got the ball with about 5.5 minutes to go at midfield or something like that. I mean, they had good field position. They had two timeouts. They had plenty of time. And it seemed like they were very conscious of not only trying to score, but trying to score and not score too quickly, or not try to move the ball too quickly, but to try to score in a timely fashion so that there wouldn't be much left after they scored. And they might have maybe cut it a little bit too close. But it looked like the way they ran their attack in the last 5 minutes of the game, it seemed like that there might have been definitely some consideration given to scoring, but not giving the ball back. That was a pretty high scoring game too. So
right.
Sometimes that, I think you get affected by that within the game. You know, it's one thing. You know, if it's 42-40, it's another thing. If it's 7-3, you know, whether you go for it on that 4th-and-1, or you know, how many more opportunities do you think you're going to get? So, I thought that was interesting the way they handled that at the end of the game.
We've talked a lot during the course of the year about the young players on this team. Obviously, more of them on the defensive side of the ball. Do you approach this any differently than you have in the past? You've had veterans here who know what the playoffs are all about, the difference of what's on the line postseason versus the regular season. Do you deal with it any differently with these kids?
Well, I think you deal with the importance of the playoffs and the importance of the game, but I think really that transcends the whole team. I don't think it's just a younger player or a guy with a medium amount of experience, 3, 4, 5. I mean, it's everybody. And I think it's good for all of us to be reminded of that, of, you know, it's a one-game season. There's only one team that will be playing the following week, and, you know, that's every decision that you make has to be well thought out and has to be, in absolutely what's best for that particular play, situation, call, whatever it happens to be, and get the most out of it. That includes practice. That includes all the preparation that you do. You know, this is your one shot to continue to play, and you got to make the most of it. And that goes for all of us, young, old, and everybody in between.
Is there ever a situation where somebody could get too pumped up, too jacked up? And we talk about Brady, and now he's so level-keeled and even-keeled in these situations, and it really plays where he slows everything down around him. Can player, maybe even a young player, get a little bit too pumped and jacked because it means so much?
Well, I think that's something that every player has to deal with, whether it's playing in their hometown or playing against a team that they used to play for, whatever the circumstances happen to be. We all have to balance the energy, enthusiasm, and the excitement of the game with doing the right thing, making good decisions, and executing our plays properly. So I think that's, it's a little bit of a fine line there. You want to be emotional. You want to be excited. You want to have that energy. But at the same time, you have to go out there and execute it well. And, a little too much or not enough of one or the other could be, not the optimum performance. So you try to find that sweet spot.
If you see that in the game, do you change up right there? Maybe try to pull that guy out for a couple of plays, try to relax him, calm him down?
Sure, it could be a player or it could be, your team. It could be the whole or a unit in your team that might need to sometimes you need to talk to him about that, or sometimes those things were talked about at halftime. So, yeah, sure, I think that's part of it.
Coach, Steve asked a halfway decent question a moment ago.
Good job, Steve.
Good job, Steve. Almost a good job. But he's talked about people thinking about, the ability for your team to score points and change up. You find teams show you a different look at the beginning of the game more often than they show other teams because they're worried about, your offense and the versatility of it?
I think it depends on the team, Fred. I think teams that are script teams, which we've seen a lot of those first 15 plays, that you see things in those first 15 plays that you probably haven't worked on in practice, however they do them, whether it's change of formation or new personnel grouping or a new player, whatever it is. And definitely the Jets are in that category. But, we've seen a number of teams that rather than just come out and run the part of their offense that they feel like it best matches up against you, they have their script of different personnel, plays, formations, and a variety of things, sometimes intended to get the ball to certain guys on their team. A couple runs for the back, a couple throws to this guy, to that guy, quarterback rollout play, whatever it is, to try to get everybody involved. And so, if that's the team you're playing, then that's what you're going to get. And if not, then I think you have a lot more chance to get whatever that opponent thinks is their best standard part of their offense to attack you with. Or the same thing defensively. I think you can defensive script too, call plays and defenses that are intended to kind of throw the offense off a little bit, to give them some key breakers, to break some tendencies, and then settle into the game and run what you want to run, but try to get them off track early in the game. So I think it depends on who you're playing.
How much do those teams that do it, we saw New Orleans do it this weekend, those scripted plays, how much of it is just to feel out how the opposition is going to handle everything?
Yeah, well, I think that's part of it, sure. Is to run different types of motions, see how the defense adjusts to those motions or shift or put a different personnel group in the game and see what type of matchup they want to use on it, what their defensive personnel is, how they're set up against it. The problem with doing that is just offensively, how much do you have out of that? I mean, you can put in 10 different looks, but you don't have the full complement of plays to go with each of those looks. So you see a look and you say, well, gee, this could be pretty favorable, but you might only have two plays out of that look or out of that grouping. So because it's new and, you don't want to invest a lot of time in it. You just want to use it to throw the other team off. But, there's only so far you can go with it. So, like everything, there's some, some pros and cons to it.
Some of the prognosticators, can I use that word?
Didn't pronounce it correctly.
They have a revelation that, the way to stop Tom Brady is to get pressure up the middle. And obviously, everyone tries to get pressure in the middle of the court, especially a pocket quarterback. And we saw Green Bay was successful in it, where they got a couple times a free runner. Was that just a missed assignment, or was it someone getting overpowered in that particular play?
I have to go back and take a look at that game, Fred, but I think, pretty much in every game, there's going to be somewhere along the line where they hit you with, the other team hits you with something, whether it's a blitz or a pressure or a stunt that – you don't quite have picked up the way you want, and there's some pressure. But I don't remember too many cases where we've just had a, you know, a large number of guys just come clean on the quarterback, or players just get, you know, overrun with power rushes and that kind of thing. But, you know, does it happen from time to time in a game? You know, it, sure.
All right, time right now for the coach's question of the week. It's brought to you by AutoTrader.com. Compare new and used cars side by side at AutoTrader.com. That's exactly what I did, Bill.
I had my best question of the year.
Shut up, you.
The ultimate automotive marketplace and proud partner of Patriots football. And because I feel so good about the question that you were about to ask, Steve will ask today's coach's question of the week.
Bill, when you tell Fred that was a good question, you doing it just to make him smile, or is that no? It's early for a retrospective, but has any player or group of players exceeded your expectations this year?
Well, it's a tough question, Steve. It's a little early for that. It's a little early for that, but you know, I don't really go into the season with expectations of this player is going to do this or this player is going to do that. What I expect is for all the players to be in good condition, to work hard, and to get the most out of what, you know, what they can give us, and then how all that comes down in terms of opportunities or production. You know, there's a lot of variables on that. I mean, certainly a player like Danny Woodhead, who wasn't even on our team at the start of the season, how could you have known that he was going to do what he's done? He wasn't even here. So, you know, you have some circumstances like that. Eric Moore is another guy that three quarters of the way through the season wasn't on anybody's radar, and all of a sudden he's, you know, out there and he's made some big plays for us. So, you know, players like that definitely are a surprise because they're not even on your team. But, you know, I think most of the other players that are on our team, you expect them to, if they're young, to progress and improve and get better with experience. And you have a certain level of expectation for the more veteran players. And a lot of that production is a function of opportunity.
Hey, Coach, is Woodhead taller than Thurman Thomas?
We were debating this earlier.
He's not 5'10".
Huh?
You've seen them both up close.
Yeah, I'm not a big expert on Thurman Thomas. I don't know how tall he was. I was on the coached against him, but I never really, you know, measured his height. So
seemed to have
a 5'8". Pass on that one.
I heard he was 6'1".
he's his favorite. Well,
he had a bigger body than Woodhead, didn't he?
Solid.
He seemed to be a little bit more solid.
I mean, Danny's pretty. I think he's pretty solid.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. About the same height.
All right.
They're saying like he's 130-140 pounds. He's 200 pounds.
We didn't say that, Fred.
You said he was small. He's not small.
I thought he was smaller than Thurman Thomas. That was the point.
About the same weight.
That, before we let you go, do you have an extra?
I've hugged both of them. He's smaller. All right.
you've been doing this for a while. Do you still this week get an extra little kick in your step, a little extra feeling of, this is it. This is for real. This is, we worked for this, and now this is it.
Oh, yeah, sure. This is what you work all year for. And this is, from the day after the playoffs last year, after the Baltimore game, so what you start working for is to get your team as strong as it can be, to get ready for the next season. And then you play all the regular season games to have an opportunity to compete in the postseason. And this is our opportunity. So that's why I said earlier, you know, you've got every one of us has to make this count. We've got to do our best with the opportunities that we have. Not only in the game on Sunday, but all the things leading up to it in preparation that we get the most out of it. So, you know, I'm sure you'll get everybody's best shot this week, ours, the Jets, all the people that are involved in the game. And, you know, we split with them twice now in the two games. So this is winner take all.
We're looking forward to it. Good luck on the Sunday, Coach. And if you want, the pay-per-view might work. You and Rex Ryan with the sumo wrestling pay-per-view, that might work.
We'll
two big markets.
Hit them first.
That might work. All right, Coach, we'll see you here next week.
Okay, thanks, Glenn.